Hunt said, arms crossed. Syrinx hopped onto the sectional, turned in a circle three times, then curled up in a ball. Ethan said nothing. Bryce reached for the wound again, but he pulled his head farther back, wincing in pain.
Why the fuck are you here, Ethan?
Hunt's voice was like gravel. Ethan's brown eyes, one half swollen, met Bryce's. Ire glowed in them.
I didn't tell them to bring me here. Perry, my Pax Omega, she arranged it.
A fuzzy memory of a brown-haired female emerged. Perry Ravenscroft, Amelie's younger sister. She did this to you? Ethan huffed a raw laugh, then winced. His ribs must be. Bryce lifted Ethan's bloody gray t-shirt, revealing disgustingly carved abs, and...
Holy shit, Ethan.
He yanked the shirt back over the extensive bruising.
It's fine.
Those look like broken ribs,
Hunt said wryly. Definitely broken ribs, Athalar, Bryce replied, sitting back on her heels. And a broken arm, from the way he's cradling it.
Skull fractures healed,
Hunt observed with equal distance, as if they were on one of his favorite veneer crime procedurals. Ethan's eyes flashed again. I'm sensing hostility and a good dose of male pride, Bryce said.
Throw in some stubbornness, and I'd say we've got ourselves a classic case of stupidity,
Hunt answered.
What the fuck is wrong with you two?
Ethan demanded. Bryce smiled at Hunt, all thoughts of the betrothal and her father and the Asteri vanishing at the amusement glittering in the angel's eyes. But she stopped smiling as she faced Ethan again.
I promise to clean you up as quickly as possible, and you'll be on your way, she said. Take your time. It's not like I have anywhere to go.
Hunt stilled.
Amelie kicked you out.
Sabine kicked me out, Ethan growled. She, Amelie, and the others did this.
Why? Bryce managed to say. Ethan met her stare.
Why do you think?
Bryce shook her head, disgust creeping through her. Ethan said,
You know how Sabine operates. Some reporter cornered me at a bar a few weeks ago about the attack last spring, and I talked about what happened, how I helped you. The article came out this morning. Sabine apparently wasn't a fan.
Oh,
Hunt lifted a brow. Ethan's bruised throat bobbed.
I might have also defended you, he said to Bryce, against a nasty quote from Sabine.
Bryce resisted the urge to pull out her phone to search for the article. Nothing in there would make her feel better about this. So she said,
Sabine's a city head.
This is really what she wants to waste her time on?
Wolves don't talk shit about other wolves.
But you did,
Hunt countered.
So did Sabine.
He said sadly, wearily to Bryce.
The Prime called you a wolf. That's good enough for me. It didn't sit well, what Sabine said, but I guess the article didn't sit well with her either. So, I'm out.
Bryce exhaled a long, long breath.
Why bring you here?
Hunt asked. Ethan grimaced with pain.
Perry remembered that we were friends once upon a time.
He tried and failed to rise.
But give me a few minutes, then I'll be gone.
You're staying here, Bryce said. Honestly, after the night she'd had, it was the last thing she wanted, especially when she still had to call her mom and convince her to get out of town.
Gods, if Ember found out Ethan was here, she'd never leave.
She'd loved him like a son. Bryce shook off the thought. You're lucky Sabine didn't kill you.
Trust me, she wanted to,
Ethan said bitterly.
But I wasn't worth the legal headache that would cause.
Bryce swallowed. Connor's little brother had once been her best friend after Danica. Fury and June had come after that.
Gods,
how many messages had she and Ethan swapped over the years? How many juvenile jokes had they shared? How many times had she bounced in the stands at one of his sunball games, screaming her lungs out for him?
The male before her
was a stranger. I should go, Ethan said thickly, like he remembered their history too, read it on her face.
Sit the fuck down, Hunt said. You can't even walk.
Fine, Ethan conceded. One night. He had to be desperate then.
Fighting the tightness in her chest, Bryce pulled out her phone.
Good, she noted the time.
Almost midnight. Her parents were likely about to go to bed.
I have to make a call.
Hunt fixed a cup of decaf just to give himself something to do, as Ethan lay bleeding on the coffee table behind him. Bryce's voice as she spoke to her parents filtered down the hall in bits and pieces.
We'll plan a long weekend next time. Maybe Hunt and I can come up to you guys. I think he'd love to finally see Nidaros.
Hunt's lips quirked upward. Bringing him home to her parents, huh? No matter that she was lying through her teeth. The coffee machine finished a heartbeat before Bryce said,
All right, I'll meet you at your hotel at 6.
Yep, bright and early.
Okay, love you, bye.
Hunt blew on the steaming hot coffee as Bryce padded back down the hall.
Everything good?
He asked her. Aside from the fact that I have to be up in a few hours.
Sure.
Bryce slid her phone onto the kitchen counter.
Tickets are switched.
She peered at Ethan, whose eyes were closed. But Hunt had no doubt the wolf was listening.
Right, Bryce said.
Beds.
I'm good on the couch, Ethan croaked.
Hunt was inclined to agree, but Bryce said,
Oh no, you're in my room. I won't have you bleeding all over my white couch.
Hunt said roughly,
I'll sleep on the couch. Holstrom, you can have my room.
Nope, Bryce countered.
It's fine, my bed is big.
Hunt shot back.
Then you sleep on the couch and give Holstrom the bed.
With my back problems?
Before Hunt could ask what the hell she was talking about, she said,
I'm tired and I don't want to argue.
Conversation over. Ethan cracked open an eye. Hunt reined in his growl of frustration. 15 minutes later, Hunt lay in his own bed, teeth gritted as he stared at the ceiling, with only a snoring syrinx for company. It was fine, totally fucking fine that Ethan Holstrom was sharing Bryce's bed. Totally fucking fine.
His bed, his blood roared. Even if he hadn't been near it in months.
His bed, his Bryce, who'd emerged from the bathroom in her sleep shorts and a faded threadbare t-shirt that did nothing to hide the shadow of her nipples behind the purple fabric. Thankfully, Holstrom's eyes were too swollen for Hunt to notice if the male looked. Not that it really mattered. He trusted Bryce, knew precisely what and who she wanted.
But
it didn't matter that Holstrom had come to Bryce's defense during the attack, or in some stupid article. He'd been a nasty fuck to her in the 2 years before that, and had let Amelie run rampant, tormenting Bryce over the death of his brother. And fine. Trust aside, maybe he was slightly on edge. Holstrom was good-looking, when he wasn't beaten to hell and back. He'd been a star sunball player at CCU. Hunt remembered watching a few of the games in the 33rd's lounge in the Comitium, marveling at Holstrom's speed and agility. The male hadn't played the sport for 2 years now, but he was still built.
Stupid, jealous idiot.
For fuck's sake, having Holstrom here bothered him more than that asshole Cormac claiming he'd marry Quinlan. He hated himself just a little bit, as he pulled his phone from the nightstand and typed in, Ethan Holstrom, Sabine Fendier, Bryce Quinlan. The article popped up immediately. Hunt skimmed it, read what Sabine had said, and focused on his breathing. On not leaping into the skies and shredding the prime apparent into pieces.
Bryce Quinlan is nothing but a spoiled party girl who was conveniently in the right place during the attack. My wolves saved innocence. She's a pathetic fame chaser.
Hunt ground his teeth so hard his jaw hurt. Toward the bottom, he found Holstrom's soundbite.
The wolves only went to Asphodel Meadows because of Bryce. She got the call for help out and held the line until we could provide backup. She saved this city. She's a hero, as far as I'm concerned. Don't let anyone convince you otherwise, especially people who weren't even in this city during the attack. Well, Hunt didn't blame Sabine for being pissed. The truth hurt. Hunt sighed and was about to set his phone back onto the nightstand when it buzzed with a message from Isaiah. Thoughts? He knew Isaiah was talking about Celestina's appointment.
Too early to tell, he wrote back. Too early for hope, too.
Isaiah answered immediately. She'll be here tomorrow evening at 5.
Try to play nice, Hunt. She's not Micah.
Hunt sent back a thumbs up, but sleep was a long time coming. Bryce gazed at her bedroom ceiling, listening to the wet, labored breathing of the male beside her. Her mom and dad had bought her lies, hook, line, and sinker. Of course, it meant she'd be getting up in 4 hours, but it was a price worth paying. No news about her engagement had been leaked yet. She could only pray it wouldn't until their train was out of the city. Ethan shifted slightly, the sound of the blankets loud in the silence. It was strange to have him here, his scent filling her nose, so similar to Connor's scent.
I could have slept on the couch, Ethan said into the darkness.
I don't trust Athalar not to smother you with a pillow. Ethan huffed a laugh.
He holds a grudge, huh?
You have no idea. Silence fell again, thick and heavy. She'd wanted Ethan right where she could see him. It was as simple as that. Wards on this place or not, she wasn't about to leave him unguarded when Sabine and Amelie might change their minds about the paperwork being too much trouble. She'd lost one holstrom already.
Danica had me keyed to the locks, Ethan said, right before everything. She showed me this place, wanted me in on the surprise. That's how I got in.
Bryce's throat clogged.
Oh, is it true that Danica helped you make the drop?
Since her voice had been broadcast through the gates into every part of the city, it was common knowledge that Danica Fendir had something to do with Bryce's drop. But rumors about exactly what ranged widely.
Yeah, Bryce said. She was my anchor. I didn't know that was possible.
Me neither. His breathing thinned. Bryce said, Ethan, when I saw Danica during the search, she told me that the others, Connor and Natalie and the whole pack of devils, held off the Reapers to buy her time to be there with me. They saved me, too. Connor saved me. Ethan said nothing for a long moment. When was the last time they'd spoken like this? Calm, quiet, without hate spewing like acid, burning everything it touched? Then Ethan said,
"He loved you more than anyone."
Her heart strained. He loved you more than anyone.
He thought you were his mate.
Bryce shut her eyes against the punch that slammed into her gut.
In the wolf sense of the word. What other sense is there? Yeah, the wolf sense.
There were several definitions of the term mate, though Bryce supposed that to Ethan, to a shifter, only one mattered. One's true lover predestined by Erd. The Fae had a similar concept. A mate was a bond deeper than marriage and beyond an individual's control. The angels, she knew, used the term far more lightly. For the Malachim, it was akin to a marriage, and matings could be arranged, like breeding animals in a zoo. But for Connor, if he'd thought Bryce was his mate, her stomach twisted again.
Did you love him?
Ethan whispered.
You know I did, Bryce said, voice thick. We waste so much time. Maybe it's our curse as immortals. To see time as a luxury, a never-ending ocean.
He loosed a long breath.
I wasted a lot of it.
Bryce couldn't tell what he was referring to. Real poetic of you. Ethan let out a soft laugh.
In the air-conditioned dark, Bryce asked,
"Why did you quit Sunball?"
She felt Ethan tense, the mattress shifting.
"Because it's a stupid game," he said, voice empty,
and turned onto his side with a groan. Bryce had no idea how to respond, so she closed her eyes, rubbing idly at the scar on her chest, and prayed for Luna to send her into a dreamless, heavy sleep. Chapter 7.
"This is bullshit."
Rune paced the ornate rugs of his father's study as the grandfather clock in the corner chimed 2 in the morning.
"You know, it's total fucking bullshit."
Lounging in a crimson leather armchair by the darkened fireplace, the Autumn King said nothing. The experiments and nonsense he worked on day and night boiled and bubbled away, the sound a steady hum in the background.
"What's the matter, cousin? Feeling possessive of your sister?"
Cormac smirked from where he leaned against the black marble mantel, white sweater stretched tight over his muscled chest. Not one golden hair on his head out of place. Fucker. Rune ignored Cormac's taunt and said to his father,
"We live in a modern city, in modern times. There are lawyers by the dozen who have endless resources to challenge this, and courts that might be amenable to setting a new precedent that protects the rights of fey females."
"Bryce will arrive willingly at the marriage altar," his father said, "as will you."
Cormac's mouth curled upward.
"I hear you're engaged to Hypaxia Enador. Congratulations."
Rune scowled at him. Cormac went on, sizing up Rune.
"Of course, the marriage is unorthodox, considering your bride's family and bloodline."
Rune stiffened.
"You've got some shit to spew about Hypaxia? Then let's hear it."
But Cormac said to the Autumn King,
"He doesn't know."
His father, damn him, seemed bored as he said,
"It didn't seem necessary. My order is law."
Rune glanced between them.
"What is this?"
His father, features tightening with distaste, as if disappointed that Rune hadn't learned it himself, said,
"The late Queen Hecuba had 2 daughters from different sires. Hypaxia's sire, Hecuba's coven learned afterward, was a powerful necromancer from the House of Flame and Shadow. Hypaxia seems to have inherited his gifts alongside her mother's."
Rune blinked, slowly. Hypaxia could raise and speak to the dead. All right, he could live with that.
Cool.
Flames danced along his father's hair, dancing over his shoulders.
"Her older sister, however, was sired by a shape-shifting male, a stag."
"So?" Cormac snorted.
"Hypaxia's half-sister is better known as the Hind."
Rune gaped at him. How had he not known this?
"She didn't inherit any witch gifts,"
Cormac continued,
"and was handed over to her father's kin. The crown naturally went to Hypaxia. But it seems that since your bride has been crowned queen, the question of her necromancy has become an issue for the witches."
"It's of no bearing on this conversation," his father said. "Rune shall marry her, necromancy or not, Odia's sister or not."
"My father found Hypaxia's background to be problematic," Cormac said.
"Then it is a good thing your father is not marrying her,"
the Autumn King countered. Cormac shut his mouth, and Rune held in his grin of delight. But his father went on.
"Rune shall marry Hypaxia, and Bryce Quinlan shall marry you, Prince Cormac. There will be no more debate."
"You do remember that Bryce and Athalar are together," Rune said.
"Try to get between them, and you'll get a refresher course on why he was called the Umbra Mortis. Last my spies reported, she still does not bear his scent, so I can only assume they have not consummated their relationship."
Just talking about this with his father was gross. Cormac cut in.
"One day, she'll be queen of Avalon. She'd be a fool to throw it away on a bastard angel."
Rune spat.
You need Bryce more than she needs either of you. She's starborn.
The Autumn King's teeth flashed.
If Bryce wished to remain free of our household, then she should not have been so brazen about showing off her power. Is that what this is about?
Fire seared through Rune's veins.
That she showed you up? That she has more power than you? What, you needed to put her back in her place?
You're delusional.
Cormac's grin promised violence.
I am stooping to marry your sister.
Many of my people will consider the union a disgrace.
Careful,
the Autumn King warned, true anger sparking in his whiskey-colored eyes.
Regardless of her human lineage, Bryce is an heir to the Starborn line, more so than my son.
He threw a frown dripping with disdain at Rune.
We have not seen starlight with such force for thousands of years. I do not take handing her over to a Valin lightly.
What the fuck are you getting from it? Nausea clawed its way up Rune's throat. His father answered,
Your sister has one value to me, her breeding potential. Both of our royal houses will benefit from the union.
Cormac added,
And the continued commitment to the alliance between our peoples.
Against what?
Had everyone lost their minds?
A weakening of magic in the royal bloodline, Cormac said, as recent generations have demonstrated.
He waved with a flame-crusted hand toward Rune and his shadows.
Fuck you, Rune hissed. Is this about the war in Pangera? The rebellion?
He'd heard rumors recently that Ophion had taken out 4 Omega submersibles in the north.
4?
Some insane shit had to be going on over there. His father had even hinted at it in the late spring, when he'd announced Rune's betrothal, that war was coming and they needed to shore up allies.
It is about ensuring that the Fae retain our power and birthright,
his father said. His icy voice had always belied the merciless flame in his blood.
Your sister can imbue that into her offspring with Cormac.
Cormac grunted his agreement, flames winking out. Rune tried again.
For fuck's sake, leave Bryce out of this. Don't we have other royals we can pair off to punch out some babies?
I didn't remember you whining so much, Rune,
Cormac said.
Before or after you tried to kill me, or when you buried a sword in Dex's gut?
Cormac's eyes gleamed like hot coals.
Just wanted to feel you boys out.
He pushed off the mantle and strode for the shut doors.
You know,
Cormac drawled over his shoulder.
The Starborn used to intermarry. Brother wed sister, aunt married nephew, and so on. All to keep the bloodline pure.
Since you seem so heavily invested in who shares Bryce's bed, perhaps the old traditions could be revived for you two. Get the hell out,
Rune snarled. His shadows writhed at his fingertips, whips ready to snap for the Avalon prince's neck.
You might rebel all you like, Rune Danon, but you are a crowned prince, as I am. Our fates are the same. But I know which one of us will rise to meet it.
Then he was gone. Our fates are the same. Cormac meant that they would both be kings, but Rune knew his fate was more complicated than that.
The royal bloodline shall end with you, prince.
The oracle's voice floated through his mind, twisting up his insides. He might very well not live long enough to see himself crowned. His blood chilled. Was it because Cormac would lead some sort of coup? He shook it off, turning to his father.
Why are you doing this? That you have to ask shows me you're no true son of mine.
The words seared through him. Nothing could ever hurt worse than what had already been done to him by this male. The scars he bore on his arms from it, mostly covered by the sleeves of his tattoos. But the words? Yeah, they stung. Rune refused to let the old bastard see it, though. Would never let him see it.
And I suppose you think Cormac will become that true son by marrying Bryce.
His father's lips curled upward, eyes as lifeless as the pit.
Cormac has always been the son I should have had, rather than the one I was burdened with.
Chapter 8. Today's the big day, huh? Hunt turned from where he'd been staring at the coffee machine, willing the grinding of the beans to drown out the thoughts roaring in his head. Bryce leaned against the white marble counter behind him, clad in leggings and an old t-shirt. Hunt tucked in his gray wings and saluted.
Approachable asshole reporting for duty.
Her lips curved upward, but he asked,
How'd it go with your parents?
She'd left well before he was up.
Perfectly. She feigned brushing dirt off her shoulders. Not a whisper about the engagement. I think Randall suspected something, but he was game to play along.
5 gold marks, says your mom calls before noon to start yelling.
Her grin was brighter than the morning sun streaming outside the windows. You're on. She angled her head, surveying his daily uniform, his usual black battle suit for the 33rd.
You should see the decorations that went up overnight. Apparently the city's rolling out the welcome mat and sparing no expense. Banners, flowers, sparkly clean streets, even in the old square.
Not one drop of drunken idiot vomit to be seen or smelled.
The appointment of a new governor is a pretty big deal, he said, wondering where she was going with this.
Yep. Then Bryce asked casually, Want me to come with you today?
There it was. Something in his chest kindled at the offer.
No hand-holding needed, Quinlan, but thanks.
Bryce's eyes glowed, pure fey predator lurking there.
Remember what we did to the last two archangels, Hunt, she said quietly.
That was new, the raw power that thundered beneath her words.
If Celestina does something fucked up, we'll react accordingly.
Bloodthirsty, Quinlan.
She didn't smile.
You might be heading in there without me today, but I'm a phone call away.
His chest ached. She'd do it, back him up against a fucking archangel, Solas burn him.
Noted,
he said thickly. He nodded toward the hallway.
How's our guest?
He looks a lot better this morning, though the broken ribs have some mending left to do. He was still sleeping when I left.
What's the plan?
Hunt kept his voice neutral. He'd slept terribly last night, every sound sending him lurching from sleep. Bryce, of course, appeared as beautiful as ever.
Ethan can stay as long as he wants, Bryce said simply. I'm not turning him over to Sabine.
Glad to hear it, Ethan said from behind her, and even Hunt started. The male had crept up with preternatural silence. He did look better. Blood still crusted Holstrom's short golden brown hair, but the swelling around his eyes had vanished, leaving only a few purple streaks. Most of the cuts were healed, except the thick slash across his brow. That'd take another day or two. Ethan pointed past Hunt.
Is that coffee?
Hunt busied himself with pouring 3 cups, passing one to Quinlan first.
A drop of coffee in a cup of milk, just as you like it.
Asshole, she swiped the mug.
I don't know how you drink it straight.
Because I'm a grown-up.
Hunt passed the second mug to Ethan, whose large hands engulfed the white ceramic cup that said, I survived class of 15,032 senior week, and all I got was this stupid mug. Ethan peered at it, his mouth twitching.
I remember this mug.
Hunt fell silent as Bryce let out a breathy laugh.
I'm surprised you do, given how drunk you were, even though you were a sweet baby frosh.
Ethan chuckled, a hint of the handsome, cocky male Hunt had heard about.
You and Danica had me doing keg stands at 10 in the morning. How was I supposed to stay sober?
The wolf sipped from his coffee.
My last memory from that day is of you and Danica passed out drunk on a couch you'd moved right into the middle of the quad.
And why was that your last memory?
Bryce asked sweetly.
Because I passed out next to you, Ethan said, grinning now.
Bryce smiled, and damn if it didn't do something to Hunt's heart. A smile of pain and joy and loss and longing and hope. But she cleared her throat, peering at the clock. I need to get into the shower. I'll be late for work. With a swish of her hips, she padded down the hallway. Syrinx scratched at Hunt's calf, and Hunt hissed,
Absolutely not. You had one breakfast already.
Probably two, if Bryce had fed him before going to meet her parents. Syrinx flopped down beside his steel bowl and let out a whine. Hunt tried to ignore him. He found Ethan watching him carefully.
What?
Hunt said, not bothering to sound pleasant. Ethan only sipped from his mug again.
Nothing.
Hunt gulped a mouthful of coffee, glanced down the hall to make sure Bryce was indeed in her room. His voice dropped to a low growl.
Allow me to repeat what I said to you last night. You bring trouble in here to Bryce, and I will fucking gut you.
Ethan's mouth twitched upward.
I'm shaking, Athalar.
Hunt didn't smile back.
Are you suddenly cool with her because she's a princess? Because of the horn and the starborn shit?
Ethan's nose crinkled with the beginnings of a snarl.
I don't care about any of that. Then why the fuck did you bother to defend her in that article? You had to know there'd be consequences with Sabine. You practically called Sabine out.
Danica showed up for her. My brother and the rest of the pack of devils showed up for her this spring. If they're not holding a grudge, then how can I?
So you needed permission from your dead brother to be nice to her?
Ethan's snarl rattled the cabinets.
Bryce was my best friend, you know. She had Danica, yeah, but I only had her. You've known Bryce for what, a few months? We were friends for 5 years. So don't fucking talk about me, my brother, or her as if you know anything about us. You don't know shit, Umbra Mortis. I know you were a dick to her for 2 years. I watched you stand by while Amelie Ravenscroft tormented her. Grow the fuck up.
Ethan bared his teeth. Hunt bared his own right back. Syrinx hopped to his feet and whined, demanding more food. Hunt couldn't help his exasperated laugh.
Fine, fine,
he said to the Chimera, reaching for his container of kibble. Ethan's eyes burned him like a brand. Hunt had seen that same take-no-shit face during televised sunball games.
Connor was in love with her for those 5 years, you know.
The wolf headed over to the couch and plopped onto the cushions.
5 years, and by the end of it, he'd only managed to get her to agree to go on a date with him.
Hunt kept his face unreadable as Syrinx devoured his second, potentially third, breakfast.
So?
Ethan turned on the morning news before propping his feet on the coffee table and interlacing his hands behind his head.
You're at month 5, bro. Good luck to you.
The Fae archives hummed with activity, loud enough that Bryce had grown accustomed to keeping in her earbuds all day, even with the door to her tiny office on sublevel Alpha shut. It wasn't that it was loud, exactly. The archives had the usual hush of any library. But so many people visited or studied or worked in the cavernous atrium and surrounding stacks that there was a constant underlying roar. The scuff of footsteps, the waterfall fountain pouring from the atrium ceiling, the clack of keyboards blending with the crinkle of turning pages, the whispers of patrons, and tourists mingling with the occasional giggle or snap of a camera. It grated on her. Gone were the solitary days in the gallery, the days of blasting her music through the sound system. Lahaba was gone, too. No incessant chatter about the latest episode of Fangs and Bangs, no whining about wanting to go outside, no dramatic monologues about Bryce's cruelty. Bryce stared at the dark computer screen on her glass desk. She reached out a foot to stroke Syrinx's coat, but her toes only met air. Right, she'd left the Chimera home to watch over Ethan. She wondered if Syrinx even remembered Lahaba. Bryce had visited the Black Dock during the days after the attack, searching for a tiny onyx boat among the mass of sailings. None had appeared. Lahaba had no remains anyway. The fire sprite had been snuffed out like a candle the moment 100,000 gallons of water had come crashing down upon her. Bryce had gone over it again and again, usually during her dance classes with Madame Kira, amid her panting and sweating. She always arrived at the same conclusion. There was nothing she might have done to stop Lahaba's death. Bryce understood it, could rationally talk about it, and yet, the thoughts still circled, as if dancing right along with her. You might have found a way, revealed yourself as Starborn earlier, told Lahaba to run while you faced Micah. She'd talked about it with Hunt, too, and he'd pointed out that all of those options would have resulted in Bryce's own death. But Bryce couldn't get past the question. Why was Lili's life any less valuable than Bryce's? Her Starborn princess status meant nothing. If it came down to it, Lili had been the better person, who had suffered for decades in bondage. The fire sprite should be free, alive and free, and enjoying herself. Bryce picked up the desktop phone, dialing. Jessica answered on the third ring.
Another question, Quinlan. That's the third one this week.
Bryce drummed her fingers on her glass desk. I've got a 9,000-year-old Rodinian bust of Thur here. Basically a broody male who was supposed to pass for the nearly forgotten minor storm deity. All that remained of him in their culture was the behemoth of a planet named after him. And Thursdays, apparently. Bryce had already sent a photo of it to Hunt, with the comment, Bryce Quinlan presents the original Alpha Hole Smolder. A museum is interested, but they're worried the former owner fudged some documents about its history. They want to make sure it's legit before showing it to the public. Any idea who to call in Rodinia to verify?
If I'm doing your job for you, then why am I not being paid for it?
Bryce ground her teeth. Because we're friends?
Are we?
You tell me. Jessica huffed a soft laugh. The enchantress who'd defected from her witch clan and sworn allegiance to the House of Flame and Shadow still lurked around Lunathian, but Bryce hadn't seen her in months. Not since the day Jessica had found Bryce poking around in the watery ruins of the gallery library and told her not to come back. Not in a mean way, just in a, this gallery is now permanently closed and those books you're looking for are hidden away where no one will ever find them, sort of manner.
Jessica said, I suppose I should consider it an honor to be called a friend by the Starborn princess daughter of the Autumn King.
A slight pause, and Bryce knew what was coming next.
And the future queen of Avalon.
Bryce swiftly opened a news website as she hissed,
Who told you? Some of the people I've turned into animals have remained in my employ, you know. They tell me what they overhear on the streets, especially the sewer rats who hope to regain their true forms one day.
Bryce truly wasn't sure if Jessica was serious. She sighed again. I don't suppose you have any insights as to why the Autumn King suddenly decided to ruin my life? Jessica tisked.
Males will always try to control the females who scare them. Marriage and breeding are their go-to methods.
Satisfying as it is to think of my father being afraid of me, that can't be it.
Why not? It's been months. You've done nothing with your new power, your titles, or the horn in your back. He grew tired of waiting.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did this just to learn how you'd react. Maybe. Bryce doodled on a piece of scrap paper beside her computer. A little heart that said BQ plus HA.
What are you going to do about it?
Jessica asked, as if she couldn't help it. Pretend it's not happening until I can't any longer? Jessica chuckled again.
I worried, you know, when I learned you were Starborn. I've watched many succumb to the allure of being the chosen one. Perhaps you and your brother have more in common than I realized. I think that's a compliment. It is. Rune Danan is one of the few who's ever been strong enough to shun what he is. Bryce grunted. You don't plan on doing anything with it, then? Jessica asked, more quietly than Bryce had ever heard. Your talent, or the horn? Definitely not the horn. And it seems most of the Starborn power's value lies in what I can breed into the Fae bloodline. Bryce straightened, twirling her pencil between her fingers. And what good does blinding people do? I mean, it does have its uses, but surely there are deadlier weapons to wield, like Hunt's lightning. You killed an archangel without access to that power. I imagine that you can now do a great many things, Quinlan. Bryce stiffened at the words, spoken so casually over an open line. She had no idea what Jessica had done with the Godslayer rifle. Honestly, she never wanted to see it again. Bryce lowered her voice, even though she knew no one was near her little subterranean office. I was given an order by the Asteri to lie low. Forever. How terribly boring of you to obey them. Bryce opened her mouth, but the intercom on her desk buzzed. Miss Quinlan, you're needed in the Northern Wing. Dr. Patris wants your opinion on that sculpture from Delsus. Bryce pushed the button. Be there in 5, she said to Jessica. I'm going to send you some photos of this piece. I'd appreciate it if you'd deign to give me your opinion. And let me know if you have any contacts in Rodinia who can help verify its authenticity. I'm busy. So am I. Perhaps I'll turn you into a toad. At least toads don't wear stupid heels to work, Bryce said, sliding her feet back into the white stilettos she'd chucked beneath her desk. Jessica let out another soft, wicked laugh. A word of advice, Quinlan. Think through the advantages of a marriage to Cormac Donnell before you decide to be a cliché and refuse. Bryce stood, cradling the phone between her ear and shoulder. Who says I'm not? There was a lengthy pause before the sorceress said, good girl, and hung up. Chapter 9. Anything?
Nothing at all. Though you were right about the all-out decorations. I nearly flew into about 6 different banners and wreaths on my way over this morning, but no reports or sightings of the governor. Pretty normal day so far, to be honest.
Hunt's low voice ran invisible hands along Bryce's arms as she picked at the remnants of her lunch, a gyro grabbed from the archive's staff cafeteria. He added,
though not if you count me receiving a photo of some marble abs while I was showing crime scene pictures to Naomi.
Thought you'd enjoy that.
His laugh rumbled over the line. It shot through her like starlight. If he was able to laugh today, good. She'd do whatever she could to keep a smile on Hunt's face. He cleared his throat.
Thur was pretty jacked, huh?
I'm petitioning for the exhibit to sell replicas in the gift shop. I think the old ladies will go wild over it. That earned her another beautiful laugh. She bit her lip against her broad smile. So, Celestina's now due to arrive at 6, then? Apparently she'd been delayed by an hour.
Yep.
Any hint of amusement faded. Bryce stirred her computer to life. So far, the news sites reported nothing beyond the headline that Lunathian, that all of Valbara, would have a new leader. Bryce was willing to admit she'd spent a good hour skimming through various images of the beautiful Archangel, pondering what sort of boss she'd be for Hunt. She found no hint about any romantic entanglements, though Micah hadn't often broadcast who he'd been fucking. It wasn't that Bryce was worried, though she'd certainly felt a scrap of something when she'd seen precisely how stunning Celestina was. But she needed a mental picture of who Hunt would be seeing day in and day out. Bryce chucked her lunch into the trash beside her desk. I could come over after work, be with you for the grand arrival.
It's all right.
I'll fill you in afterward. It might take a while, though, so feel free to eat without me.
But it's pizza night.
Hunt laughed. Glad you've got your priorities straight.
His wings rustled in the background.
Any word about Prince Dickhead?
Nothing on the news, nothing from my mom.
Small blessing.
You owe me 5 gold marks.
Add it to my tab, Quinlan.
Don't forget that my mom will probably be pissed at you for not telling her.
I already have my bug-out bag packed and ready to flee to another territory.
She chuckled. I think you'd have to go to Nenya to escape her. Hunt laughed with her. Don't you think she...
A glow flared at her chest, from the scar. Bryce?
Hunt's voice sharpened. Bryce frowned down at the glowing star between her breasts, visible in her low-cut dress. Not again. Its glowing had been rare until now, but after last night, she looked up. My boss is here. I'll call you back, she lied, and hung up before Hunt could reply. Bryce lifted her chin and said to Cormac Donnell, lurking in the doorway, If you're looking for How Not to Be an Asshole, it's shelved between Bye Loser and Get the Fuck Out. The Crown Prince of Avalon had changed into a climate-appropriate gray t-shirt that did little to hide the considerable muscles of his arms. A tattoo of strange symbols encircled his left bicep, the black ink gleaming in the bright lights. He examined her closet-sized office with typical Fey arrogance and disapproval.
Your star glows in my presence because our union is predestined, in case you were wondering.
Bryce barked out a laugh. Says who?
The Oracle.
Which one? There were 12 sphinxes around the world, each one bitchier than the last. The meanest of them, apparently, dwelled in the Ocean Queen's court beneath.
Does it matter?
Cormac turned, noting the shell-white dress Bryce wore, the gold bracelets, and, yes, her ample cleavage. Or was he gazing at the star? She supposed it made no difference. I just want to know whose ass to kick. Cormac's mouth quirked upward.
I don't know why I expected a half-breed to be as docile as a pure-blooded female.
You're not doing yourself any favors.
I did not say I preferred a tamer female.
Gross. What did the Oracle say to you exactly?
What did she say to you before she began clawing at her blinded eyes?
She didn't want to know how he'd found out. Maybe her father had told him, warned him about his bride. Old news, I asked first. Cormac glowered.
The Oracle of Avalon said I was destined to unite with a princess who possessed a star in her heart, that our mingling would bring great prosperity to our people.
Bryce drummed her fingers on her glass desk. A lot of room for interpretation there.
Trust an oracle to call sex mingling.
I disagree,
Bryce sighed. Tell me why you're here, then leave, please. I have work to do.
Cormac studied the small torso of Thur on her desk.
I wanted to see where my betrothed works, to gain some insight into your life.
You say that as if it's a foreign thing for females to have jobs.
In Avalon it is.
He leaned against the door jamb.
My people have let the old traditions remain untouched. You will need to adjust.
Thanks, but no. I like my TV and phone, and I like being considered a person, not livestock for breeding.
Like I said last night, you don't have a choice.
His voice was flat, his eyes hollow. Bryce crossed her arms, realized it put her cleavage and the star on better display, and lowered them to her sides once more. Can I pay you to drop this whole engagement thing?
Cormac laughed.
I have more gold than I know what to do with. Money holds little power over me.
He crossed his arms as well. You have a chance to help your people and this world.
Once you bear me a few heirs, you can take whatever lovers you wish. I will do the same. This marriage doesn't need to burden either of us.
Except for the part where I have to sleep with you and live in your backwater land.
His lips curled upward.
I think you'll find the first part to be rather enjoyable.
Spoken with true male arrogance. He shrugged, clearly confident that she would enjoy him.
I haven't had any complaints yet. And if our union helps our people and strengthens the royal bloodlines, then I'll do it.
The Fae are no people of mine. They never had been, and certainly not now, after they'd locked out innocent citizens in this city and refused to come to anyone's aid during the attack last spring. She pointed to the open door. Bye. He shimmered with disgust.
Your father let you run wild for too long.
My father's name is Randall Sulago. The Autumn King is just a male who gave me genetic material. He will never have a place in my life. Neither will you. Cormac took a step back from the doorway, shadows swirling. His golden hair glowed like molten metal.
You're immortal now, as well as starborn. Time to act like it.
Bryce slammed the door in his face.
Hunt considered the beautiful archangel seated at Micah's old desk. Glowing skin as dark as onyx brought out the light brown of her eyes, and her delicate mouth seemed permanently set in a patient smile. It was that smile, that gentle, kind smile, that threw him.
Take a seat, please,
Celestina said to him, Naomi, and Isaiah. Hunt nearly choked at the word, please.
Micah would never have said anything of the sort.
Isaiah appeared equally baffled as they settled into the three chairs before the simple oak desk. Naomi kept her face wholly blank, her black wings rustling.
Behind the governor's gleaming white wings, the wall of windows revealed an unusual number of angels soaring by, all hoping to catch a glimpse of the female who had entered the comitium in a grand procession 30 minutes ago. The lobby ceremony had been the start of Hunt's utter confusion. Rather than strutting magnanimously past the gathered crowd, the voluptuous, lush-bodied archangel had taken her time, pausing to greet the Malachim who stepped forward, asking for their names, saying things like,
I'm so very happy to meet you, and I look forward to working with you.
Kothona spare him, but Hunt honestly thought she might be serious. He didn't let his guard down, though. Not when she'd reached him, Naomi, and Isaiah, standing before the elevator doors to escort her to her new residence and office. Not when she'd taken his hand with genuine warmth, and certainly not now that they sat here for this private meeting. Celestina surveyed them with unnerving clarity.
You three are all that remains of Micah's triari.
None of them replied. Hunt didn't dare mention Vic, or beg the Archangel to pull her out of Melano's inky depths, to spare her from a living hell. It had been months. Odds were that Vic had gone insane, was likely begging for death with each moment in that box.
The governor angled her head, her tightly curling black hair shifting with the movement. She wore pale pink and lilac robes, gauzy and ethereal, and the silver jewelry along her wrists and neck glowed as if lit by the moon. Where Micah had radiated dominance and might, she shimmered with feminine strength and beauty. She barely came up to Hunt's chest, yet. She had a presence that had Hunt eyeing her carefully.
Not ones for talking, are you?
Her voice held a musical quality, as if it had been crafted from silver bells.
I suppose my predecessor had rules quite different from mine.
She drummed her fingers on the desk, nails tinted a soft pink.
Allow me to make this clear. I do not wish for subservience. I want my triari to be my partners. I want you to work alongside me to protect this city and territory and help it meet its great potential.
A pretty little speech. Hunt said nothing. Did she know what he'd done to Sandriel? What Bryce had done to Micah? What Micah had done in his quest to supposedly protect this territory?
Celestina wrapped a curl around a finger, her immaculate wings shifting.
I see that I shall have to do a great deal of work to earn your trust.
Hunt kept his face bland,
even as he wished that she'd be equally as forthright as Micah. He'd always hated his owners who'd disguised their dead souls in pretty speeches. This could easily be part of a game, to get them to trust her, come limping into her soft arms, and then spring the trap, make them suffer. Naomi's sharp chin lifted.
We don't wish to offend you, Your Grace.
Call me Celestina,
the Archangel interrupted.
I abhor formalities.
Micah had said the same thing once. Hunt had been a fool to buy it then. Isaiah's wings shifted, like his friend was thinking the same. His friend, who still bore the halo tattoo across his brow. Isaiah was the better male, the better leader, and still a slave. Rumors had swirled in the months before Micah's demise that the Archangel would free him soon. That possibility was now as dead as Micah himself. Naomi nodded, and Hunt's heart tightened at the tentative hope in his friend's jet-black eyes.
We don't wish to offend you, Celestina.
We and the 33rd are here to serve you. Hunt suppressed his bristle. Serve.
The only way you could offend me, Naomi Boreas, would be to withhold your feelings and thoughts. If something troubles you, I want to know about it, even if the matter is due to my own behavior. She smiled again. We're partners. I've found that such a partnership worked wonders on my legions in Nenya, as opposed to the systems my fellow archangels prefer.
Torture and punishment and death. Hunt blocked out the sear of white-hot iron rods pounding his back, roasting his skin, splitting it down to the bone as Sandriel watched from her divan, popping grapes into her mouth. Isaiah said,
We're honored to work with you, then.
Hunt pushed aside the bloody, screaming horrors of the past, as another lovely smile bloomed on the governor.
I've heard so many wonderful things about you, Isaiah Tiberian. I'd like you to stay on as leader of the 33rd, if that is what you wish.
Isaiah bowed his head in thanks, a tentative, answering smile gracing his face. Hunt tried not to gape. Was he the only asshole who didn't believe any of this? Celestina turned her gaze upon him.
You have not yet spoken, Hunt Athalar. Or do you wish to go by Orion?
Hunt is fine.
Only his mother had been allowed to call him Orion. He'd keep it that way. She surveyed him again, elegant as a swan.
I understand that you and Micah did not necessarily see eye to eye.
Hunt reined in his urge to growl in agreement. Celestina seemed to read his inclination.
On another day, I'd like to learn about your relationship with Micah and what went wrong, so we might avoid such a situation ourselves.
What went wrong is that he tried to kill my... Bryce Quinlan.
Hunt couldn't stop the words or his stumble. Naomi's brows nearly touched her hairline at his outburst, but Celestina sighed.
I heard about that. I'm sorry for any pain you and Miss Quinlan suffered, as a result of Micah's actions.
The words hit him like stones. I'm sorry. He'd never, not in all the centuries he'd lived, heard an archangel utter those words. Celestina went on.
From what I've gathered, you have chosen to live with Miss Quinlan rather than in the barracks tower.
Hunt kept his body loose, refused to yield to the tension rising in him.
Yeah.
I am perfectly fine with that arrangement, Celestina said,
and Hunt nearly toppled out of his chair. Isaiah looked inclined to do the same, especially as the Archangel said to Isaiah and Naomi,
If you should wish to dwell in your own residences, you are free to do so. The barracks are good for building bonds, but I believe the ones between you are quite unshakable. You are free to enjoy your own lives.
She glanced at Isaiah, to the halo still tattooed on his brow.
I am not one to keep slaves, she said,
disapproval tightening her face.
And though the Asteri might brand you as such, Isaiah, you are a free male in my eyes. I will endeavor to continue Micah's work in convincing them to free you.
Isaiah's throat worked, and Hunt studied the window, the shining city beyond, to give him privacy. Across the room, Naomi followed his lead.
Celestina couldn't be serious. This had to be an act. I'd like to hit the ground running, the governor went on. Each morning, let's gather here so you can update me on any news, as well as your plans for the day. Should I have tasks for you or the 33rd, I shall convey them then.
She folded her hands in her lap.
I am aware that you are skilled at hunting demons, and have been employed to do so in the past. If any break into this city, gods forbid, I'd like you to head up the containment and extermination unit against them.
Hunt jerked his chin in confirmation. Easy enough, though this spring dealing with the Cristallos had been anything but easy. Celestina finished.
And should an issue arise before our meeting tomorrow morning, my phone is always on.
Naomi nodded again. What time tomorrow?
Let's say 9, Celestina said. No need to drag ourselves out of bed simply to look busy.
Hunt blinked at her.
And I'd like the others to get some rest after their journey.
Others?
Isaiah asked. The archangel frowned slightly.
The rest of the Triari. They were delayed by a few hours due to some bad weather up north.
All three of them stilled.
What do you mean?
Hunt asked quietly.
It was in the formal letter you received, she said to Isaiah, who shook his head.
Celestina's frown deepened.
The Asteri's communications minister is not usually one to make mistakes. I apologize on their behalf. The Asteri found themselves with a predicament after losing two archangels, you see. You are all that remains of Micah's Triari, but Sandriel had a full stable in that regard. I had no Triari of my own in Nenya, as the Legion there technically answers to the Asteri, but Ephraim wanted to bring his own Triari with him. So, rather than have his group get too large, it was split, since ours is so depleted.
Roaring erupted in Hunt's head. Sandriel's Triari, the actual scum of the universe. They were coming here, to be part of this group, in this city. A knock sounded on the door, and Hunt twisted as Celestina said,
Come in.
Lightning crackled at Hunt's fingertips. The door opened, and in swaggered Pollux Antonius and Baxian Argos. The Hammer and the Hellhound. Chapter 10. Absolute quiet settled over the governor's office as Hunt and his friends took in the two newcomers. One was dark-haired and brown-skinned, tall and finely muscled, the Hellhound. His jet-black wings shimmered faintly, like a crow's feathers. But it was the wicked scar snaking down his neck, forking across the column of his throat, that snared the eye. Hunt knew that scar. He'd given it to the Hellhound 30 years ago. Some powers, it seemed, even immortality couldn't guard against. Baxian's obsidian eyes simmered as they met Hunt's stare. But Pollux's cobalt eyes lit with feral delight as he sized up Naomi, then Isaiah, and finally Hunt. Hunt allowed his lightning to flare as he stared down the golden-haired, golden-skinned leader of Sandriel's Triari, the most brutal, sadistic asshole to have ever walked Midgard's soil. Motherfucker number one. Pollux smirked, slow and satisfied. Celestina was saying something, but Hunt couldn't hear it. Couldn't hear anything except Pollux drawling, Hello, friends. Before Hunt leapt from his chair and tackled him to the floor. Ethan Holstrom dabbed a damp washcloth at the last of the cuts healing on his face, wincing. Bryce's bathroom was exactly as he'd expected it to be, full of at least 3 kinds of shampoos and conditioners, an array of hair treatments, brushes, curling rods of 2 different sizes, a blow dryer left plugged into the wall, half-burned candles, and makeup scattered up and down the marble counter like some glittery bomb had gone off. It was almost exactly the same as her bathroom at the old apartment. Just being here made his chest tighten. Just smelling this place, smelling her, made his chest tighten. He'd had little to distract himself today, sitting alone with her chimera, Syrinx, Athalar had called him, on the couch, nearly dying of boredom watching daytime TV. He didn't feel like trawling the news for hours, awaiting a glimpse of the new Archangel. None of the sports channels had interesting coverage on, and he had no desire to listen to those assholes talk anyway. Ethan angled his face before the mirror to better see the cut lacing across his brow. This particular beauty had been from Sabine, a swipe of a claw-armed fist. He had a feeling the blow had been intended for his eyes. Sure, they'd have healed after a few days or weeks, sooner if he'd gone to a medwitch. But being blinded wasn't at the top of his to-do list. Not that he really had anything else on his to-do list today. His phone buzzed on the counter, and Ethan peered down to see three different news alerts and photo essays about the arrival of Celestina. Had shit not gone down with Sabine, he'd probably be gearing up to meet the beautiful Malik as part of the Wolves' formal welcome, and fealty swearing bullshit. But now he was a free agent, a wolf without a pack. It wasn't common, but it did happen. Lone wolves existed, though most roamed the wilds and were left to their own devices. He just never thought he'd be one. Ethan set down his phone, hanging up the washcloth on the already crowded towel bar. He willed the shift, inhaling sharply and bidding his bones to melt, his skin to ripple. It occurred to him a moment after he took his wolf form that the bathroom wasn't quite large enough. Indeed, a swish of his tail knocked over various bottles, sending them scattering across the marble floor. His claws clicked on the tiles, but he lifted his muzzle toward the mirror and met his reflection once more. The horse-sized wolf that stared back was hollow-eyed, though his fur covered most of his bruising and the cuts, save for the slash along his brow. He inhaled, and the breath stuck in his ribs, in some empty, strange pocket. Wolf with no pack. Amelie and Sabine had not merely bloodied him. They'd exorcised him from their lives, from the den. He backed into the towel rack, tossing his head this way and that. Worse than an Omega. Friendless, kinless, unwanted, Ethan shuddered back into his humanoid form. Panting, he braced his hands on the bathroom counter and waited until the nausea subsided. His phone buzzed again, every muscle in his body tensed. Perry Ravenscroft. He might have ignored it had he not read the first part of the message as it appeared.
"Please tell me you're alive."
Ethan sighed. Amelie's younger sister, the Omega of the Black Rose Pack, was technically the reason he'd made it here. Had said nothing about her sister and Sabine ripping him to shreds, but she'd carried him into the apartment. She was the only one of his former pack to bother to check in. She added,
"Just write back, yes, no."
Ethan stared at the message for a long moment. Wolves were social creatures. A wolf without a pack? It was a soul wound, one that would cripple most wolves. But he'd been struck a soul wound 2 years ago and had survived. Even though he knew he couldn't endure taking his wolf form again anytime soon. Ethan took in the bathroom, the various crap Bryce had left lying around. She'd been a wolf without a pack for those 2 years, too. Yeah, she had Fury and Juniper, but it wasn't the same as Danica and Connor and the pack of devils. Nothing would ever be the same as that. Ethan typed back, yes, then slid his phone into his pocket. Bryce would be home soon, and she'd mentioned something about pizza. Ethan padded out into the airy apartment, Syrinx lifting his head from the couch to inspect him. The chimera lay back down with a puff of approval, lion's tail waggling. The silence of the apartment pressed on Ethan.
He'd never lived on his own. He'd always had the constant chaos and closeness of the den, the insanity of his college dorm, or the hotels he'd stayed at with the CCU sunball team. This place might as well have been another planet. He rubbed at his chest, as if it'd erase the tightness. He'd known precisely why he'd disobeyed Sabine's order this spring when Bryce had screamed for help. The sound of her pleading had been unbearable, and when she'd mentioned children at risk, something had exploded in his brain. He had no regrets about what he'd done. But could he endure its consequences? Not the beating, he could weather that shit any day. But being here, alone, adrift. He hadn't felt like this since Connor and the others had died, since he'd walked away from his sunball team and stopped answering their calls. He had no idea what the hell he'd do now. Perhaps the answer wasn't some big life-altering thing. Maybe it could be as simple as putting one foot in front of the other.
That's how you wound up following someone like Amelie.
A voice that sounded an awful lot like Connor's growled.
Make better choices this time, pup. Assess. Decide what you want.
But for now, one foot in front of the other. He could do that, if just for today. Ethan walked to the door and pulled the leash off the hook on the wall beside it. Wanna walk? He asked Syrinx. The beast rolled onto his side as if saying, belly rub, please. Ethan slung the leash back onto its hook. You got it, bud. Approachable asshole, huh? Bryce leaned against the bars of the immaculate cell beneath the comitium, frowning at where Hunt sat on a steel-framed cot, head hanging. He straightened at her words, gray wings tucking in. His face? Bryce stiffened. What the fuck, Hunt? Black eye, swollen lip, cuts along his temple, his hairline.
I'm fine,
he grumbled, even though he looked as bad as Ethan.
Who called you?
Your new boss, she filled me in. She sounds nice, by the way. Bryce pressed her face through the bars. Definitely nice, since she hasn't kicked your ass to the curb yet.
She did put me in this cell.
Isaiah put you in the cell.
Whatever.
Don't whatever me. Gods, she sounded like her mother. His voice sharpened.
I'll see you at home. You shouldn't be here.
And you shouldn't have gotten into a stupid fight, but here you are. Lightning forked down his wings.
Go home.
Was he really pissed she was here? She snorted. Were you intentionally trying to sabotage yourself today? Hunt shot to his feet, then winced at whatever pain it summoned in his battered body.
Why the fuck would I do that?
A deep male voice answered,
Because you're a stupid bastard.
Bryce grimaced. She'd forgotten about Pollux. Hunt snarled,
I don't want to hear your fucking voice.
Get used to it. Said another male voice from the elevator bay at the end of the White Hall. Bryce found a tall, lean angel approaching with a natural elegance. Not beautiful. Not in the way that Hunt and Pollux and Isaiah were, but striking, intense and focused. Baxian Argos, the hellhound. An angel with the rare ability to shift into the form that had given him his nickname. Hunt had told her about him, too. Baxian hadn't ever tortured Hunt or others, as far as she knew. But he'd done plenty of awful things in Sandriel's name. He'd been her chief spymaster and tracker. Baxian bared his teeth in a fierce smile. Hunt bristled. Like hell would these males make her back down. Pollux crooned from his cell, his pretty boy face as battered as Hunt's.
Why don't you come a little closer, Bryce Quinlan?
Hunt growled.
Don't talk to her.
Bryce snapped. Spare me the protective alpha hole act. Before Hunt could reply, she'd stalked over to Pollux's cell. Pollux made a show of looking her over from head to stilettos.
I thought your kind usually worked the night shift.
Bryce snickered. Any other outdated jabs to throw my way?
At Pollux's silence, Bryce said, "Sex work is a respectable profession in Crescent City. It's not my fault Pangera hasn't caught up with modern times." Pollux brimmed with malice.
"Micah should have killed you and been done with it."
She let her eyes glow, let him see that she knew all he'd done to Hunt, how much she detested him. "That's the best you can come up with. I thought the hammer was supposed to be some kind of sadistic badass.
And I thought half-breed whores were supposed to keep their mouths closed. Fortunately, I know the perfect thing to shove in that trap of yours to shut you up."
Bryce winked saucily. "Careful, I use teeth." Hunt coughed, and Bryce leaned forward, close enough that if Pollux extended an arm, his hand could wrap around her throat. Pollux's eyes flared, noting that fact. Bryce said sweetly,
"I don't know who you pissed off to be sent to this city, but I'm going to make your life a living hell if you touch him again."
Pollux lunged, fingers aiming for her neck. She let her power surge, bright enough that Pollux reared back, an arm flung over his eyes. Bryce's lips quirked to the side.
"I thought so."
She backed away a few steps, pivoting toward Hunt once more. He cocked an eyebrow, eyes shining beneath the bruises.
"Fancy, Quinlan."
"I aim to impress."
A low laugh whispered behind her, and Bryce found the hellhound now leaning against the wall opposite the cells, beside a large TV.
"I take it I'll be seeing more of you than I'd like," Bryce said.
Baxian sketched a bow. He wore lightweight black armor made of overlapping plates. It reminded her of a reptilian version of Hunt's suit.
"Maybe you'll give me a tour. Keep dreaming,"
Hunt muttered. The hellhound's dark eyes gleamed. He turned on his heel and said before entering the elevator,
"Glad someone finally put a bullet through Micah's head."
Bryce stared after him in stunned silence. Had he come down here for any reason other than to say that? Hunt whooshed out a breath. Pollux remained pointedly silent in his cell. Bryce gripped the bars of Hunt's cell.
"No more fights."
"If I say yes, can we go home now?"
He gave her a mournful pout, almost identical to Syrinx's begging. Bryce suppressed her smile.
"Not my call."
A fair female voice floated from an intercom in the ceiling.
"I've seen enough. He's free to go, Miss Quinlan."
The bars hissed, the door unlocking with a clank. Bryce said to the ceiling, "Thank you." Pollux growled from his cell.
"And what of me? I didn't start this fight."
The shithead had balls. Bryce would give him that. Celestina answered coolly,
"You also didn't do anything to defuse it."
"Forgive me for fighting back while being pummeled by a brute."
From the corner of her eye, Bryce could have sworn Hunt was grinning wickedly. The governor said, voice taking on a no-bullshit sharpness,
"We shall discuss this later."
Pollux was wise enough not to snap a reply. The archangel went on,
"Keep Athalar in line, Miss Quinlan."
Bryce waved at the camera mounted beside the TV. When Celestina didn't answer, Bryce stepped back to allow Hunt out of the cell. He limped toward her, badly enough that she looped her arm around his waist as they aimed for the elevator. Pollux sneered from his cell.
"You two mongrels deserve each other."
Bryce blew him a kiss. Chapter 11 Therion needed a new job. Honestly, even years into the position, he had no idea how he'd wound up in charge of the River Queen's intelligence. His schoolmates probably laughed every time his name came up. A thoroughly average, if not lazy, student, he'd gotten his passing grades mostly through charming his teachers. He had little interest in history or politics or foreign languages, and his favorite subject in school had been lunch.
Maybe that had primed him.
People were far more inclined to talk over food. Though any time he'd tortured an enemy,
He'd puked his guts up afterward. Fortunately, he'd learned that a cold beer, some mirthroot, and a few rounds of poker usually got him what he needed. And this, research. Normally, he'd tap one of his analysts to pore over his current project, but the River Queen wanted this kept secret. As he sat before the computer in his office, all it took was a few keystrokes to access what he wanted. Sophie Renast's email account. Declan Emmett had set up the system for him, capable of hacking into any non-imperial email within moments. Emmett had charged him an arm and a fin for it, but it had proved more than useful. The first time Therian had used it had been to help track down his sister's murderer. The sick fuck had emailed himself photos of his victims. Even what Therian had done to him afterward hadn't erased the image seared into his brain of his sister's brutalized body. Therian swallowed, looking toward the wall of glass that opened into clear cobalt waters. An otter shot past, yellow vest blazingly bright in the river water, a sealed tube clenched between his little fangs. A creature of both worlds. Some of the messenger otters dwelled here, in the blue court deep beneath the Istros, a small metropolis both exposed and sealed off from the water around them. Other otters lived above, in the bustle and chaos of Crescent City proper. Therian couldn't ever move above, he reminded himself. His duties required him here, at the River Queen's beck and call. Therian peered at his bare feet, digging them into the cream shag carpet beneath his desk. He'd been in human form for nearly a day now. He'd have to enter the water soon, or risk losing his fins. His parents found it odd that he'd chosen to live in one of the dry glass and metal buildings, anchored into a sprawling platform at the bottom of the river, and not near them in the network of underwater caves that doubled as apartments for the mayor. But Therian liked TV, liked eating food that wasn't soggy at best, cold and wet at worst. He liked sleeping in a warm bed, sprawled over the covers and pillows, and not tucked into a seaweed hammock swinging in the currents. And since living on land wasn't an option, this underwater building had become his best bet. The computer pinged, and Therian pivoted back to the screen. His office was in one of the glass-domed bubbles that made up the Blue Court Investigative Unit's headquarters. The River Queen had only allowed their construction because computers had to stay dry. Therian himself had been forced to explain that simple fact. His queen was almighty, beautiful, and wise, and like so many of the older Vanir, had no idea how modern technology worked. Her daughter, at least, had adapted better. Therian had been instructed to show her how to use a computer, which was how he'd wound up here. Well, not here in this office, but in this place, in his current life. Therian skimmed through Sophie Renast's email archive. Evidence of a normal existence. Emails with friends about sports or TV.